We've been following the scarlet thread of redemption through the Bible. And when you think about, especially the Old Testament, as we're going through it, it's the history of the nation of Israel. And why is that? The answer is that these are the people that God chose to reveal himself to and to ultimately bring his son into the world through them. And so when sin happened in the Garden of Eden, God had promised that there would be the seed of the woman who would come and bruise or crush the head of the serpent. And that was a very vague prophecy of the coming of the Messiah. It's the very first prediction that a Savior would come to be able to redeem a lost humanity because of the sin that happened in the beginning. And so God chose a man named Abraham and brought him from Ur of the Chaldees, which would be present-day Iraq, and brought him into the land of Canaan, which would be present-day Israel today, and promised him that land, promised him that he would become a great nation, and also told him that through him, all the families on the earth would be blessed. More specifically, that through his seed or his descendant, all the families on the earth would be blessed, and that descendant would be ultimately the Lord Jesus Christ. And so the Bible covers the history from Abraham to his son Isaac to his son Jacob, and then Jacob's 12 sons who became the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel, Jacob's name having been changed by God to Israel. So the 12 sons of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. One of those sons is Joseph, and that's the story that we're in right now. The interesting thing that I mentioned last week about this, there's about 13 chapters in the book of Genesis, which is quite a bit that's dedicated to Joseph. Only Joseph is not in that scarlet thread. It doesn't go from Jacob to Joseph on down ultimately to Jesus. It goes from Jacob to Judah, another son of Jacob's, ultimately down to Jesus. And I think the reason there's so much that's dedicated to Joseph is because he is the link for the survival of Jacob and his family, because it's by him being sold as a slave down into Egypt, mistreated by his brothers, but ultimately taken down into Egypt, that God brings him up to be the governor of Egypt and be able to have the wisdom to help not only the Egyptians, but his family in Canaan to be able to survive the great famine that would come upon the land. And so he is the connecting link, not only to the survival, I think, of Israel, but also the piece in the story that shows us how they got down into Egypt and how they became then slaves after that and then redeemed by God through the hands of Moses, leading them out of Egypt and ultimately into the promised land. And so here we are in the story of Joseph. And we talked last week about Joseph's dreams that he had, how ultimately he would be the ruler over his brothers. His brothers would bow down to him, even his mom, his parents would bow down to him, and his brothers didn't like that very much. And so they wanted to kill him. But ultimately, they sold him as a slave to some Ishmaelite and Midianite traders that were going down into Egypt. So Joseph was sold as a slave into Potiphar's household, and God blessed him there. You remember that? He wasn't just surviving slavery. He was thriving in that because God was with him, and God blessed him, and he became the one who was really in charge of Potiphar's household until Potiphar's wife made a move on him. And Joseph declined, and Potiphar's wife falsely accused him, and that got Joseph thrown into prison. But he didn't just survive prison, did he? He thrived in the prison, again, because God was with him and blessed him, even in prison. And it tells us that we don't have to have perfect circumstances for our lives to be thriving. We can thrive in the midst of difficulty, as we watch Joseph and his life. And so he's in prison, and that's kind of where we left off last time. And what took place after that is that while he is in prison, two of Pharaoh's officers are put in prison as well, the butler and the baker. And they both have dreams that trouble them. And Joseph comes to them in the prison and says, "What are your dreams?" And they told him their dreams, and Joseph interpreted them for him. Basically, to the butler, everything's going to be okay in 3 days. To the baker, you're not going to be okay in 3 days. You're going to be hung. You're going to be killed for what you've done. And Joseph told the butler, "When this comes to pass and you're restored to your office with Pharaoh, remember me because I've been falsely accused. That's why I'm in prison. And so it happened just like Joseph predicted. The butler was restored to his office. The baker was hung. And the butler forgot. He forgot about Joseph. 2 years passed by. And Joseph is still in prison. And then Pharaoh has a dream. And that's where we're looking at these chapters today, where Pharaoh has a dream. In fact, he has two dreams in the same night. And the dream is predicting the coming of great plenty in Egypt, but also the coming of a great famine that's going to take place in Egypt. And so he tells his dreams to his magicians to try and get the interpretation. And he tells of these great plump cows that come up out of the river, perhaps the Nile River, come up. And there's these seven plump cows that come up. And then there's these seven gaunt ones that come up afterwards and eat up the seven plump ones. But they don't look plump now. They still look really skinny. And then he wakes up and then he goes back and he has another dream. And there's these seven plump heads of grain on one stalk, followed by these seven real blighted grains that come up and devour the seven plump ones. And so he wakes up, he brings the magicians, they can't tell him what's going on. And it's at that point that the butler remembers, oh, I remember now, there was this Hebrew man in prison that interpreted my dream. Let's bring him in. And so they clean Joseph up and they bring him before Pharaoh, and Joseph interprets the dream. And he says they're one and the same. And there's two, because God is going to do this shortly. And what he's going to do is he's going to bring 7 years of great plenty on Egypt. But then there's going to be 7 years of famine, and the famine is going to be so bad that you're not even going to remember the good years of plenty. And so Joseph tells Pharaoh, this is what, in essence, what I would do. I would set a wise man over all of Egypt. And during these 7 years of plenty, 20% flat tax on everybody. We're going to take 1/5 of everything, and we're going to store that up for the 7 years of famine that are going to come. And Pharaoh said, is there anyone wiser in all of Egypt but this man right here who has the spirit of God within him? And so at this time, Joseph is elevated to the governor of Egypt. He's the second most powerful person in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh upon the throne. And so Pharaoh gives him a wife at this time. He changes Joseph's name to Zaphnath-Paneah. Isn't that great? From Joseph to Zaphnath-Paneah, to I think mean God speaks and God hears or something to that fashion in his language. And he gives him as wife Asenath, the daughter of the priest of On. And so he has two children by her, Ephraim and Manasseh. And so there's the 7 years of plenty that take place, and Joseph brings in all of the food at that time and stores it up for these 7 years. But then come the 7 years of famine. And guys, it's not just in the land of Egypt. It's all over the land at that time. So there's a famine in Canaan as well. So Jacob is running out of food at this time as well. So what we're going to do is take up the story in verse 42, and or chapter 42, and we're going to see how Jacob sends his sons, Joseph's brothers, down to Egypt to buy food. Now, you have to remember, the last time that Joseph and brothers have been together is when the brothers wanted to kill Joseph. And the brothers sold Joseph as a slave to Ishmaelite and Midianite traders that were going down into Egypt. So now the brothers are going to have to go down into Egypt. And it's been 20 years since this has happened. So 20 years have passed. And that's where we take up the story here in chapter 42, beginning from verse 1. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." Now, how come there's grain in Egypt? Who knows why there's grain in Egypt? Because Joseph's in Egypt. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Hey, I hear there's grain down there. And it's because his son, whom he thinks is dead, is the reason that there's grain down there. And so he says to his other sons, "Why are you looking at each other? Get up and go down to Egypt." And I wonder if they're looking at each other because it's like, Egypt, we are guilty of what we've done to our brother Joseph. And I wonder if that's an underlying theme. In fact, I really know that it's an underlying theme of what's going on in their hearts through this whole process. 20 years that they've had to live, not just without their brother, but they've had to live with their father, who has grieved for so long it was his favorite son. Joseph was his favorite. And so they've lived with that grief. And now they're going to be going down into Egypt. So we read in verse 3, "So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, lest some calamity befall him. And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth." This is the beginning of the fulfillment of his dreams, isn't it? Remember the 11 sheaves bowing down, the sun, moon, and the 11 stars bowing down. Well, here's 10 brothers coming and bow down. 10, why just 10? Because Benjamin is left at home. Because Benjamin is also the son of Rachel. Rachel was Jacob's favored wife. He really only wanted Rachel, but he ended up with Leah and the children by Zilpah and Bilhah. And from those four women come the 12 sons of Israel. Joseph and Benjamin were the only ones that were from Rachel. And so he loved Joseph. He loves Benjamin. Benjamin is the youngest. He's keeping him at home and not sending him down. So he sends the brothers down, and the brothers bow down before Joseph. Verse 7, "Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. Then he said to them, 'Where did you come from?' And they said, 'From the land of Canaan to buy food.' So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him." Now, it's been 20 years. Joseph was 17 when he was sold as a slave. So he's 37 years old now. And, you know, you're going to change between 17 and 37. Also, Joseph, and this is speculation, I'm guessing that he is probably dressed more as an Egyptian because he's an Egyptian official right now. He might even have the headdress. He might even have the mascara and the eyeliner on, you know, like we see in the movies. Speculation. But maybe he's dressed like that. And we're also going to find out that he's speaking through an interpreter. So he's speaking Egyptian to them. He's not speaking Hebrew. Now, they haven't seen him for 20 years. The last person they're going to think is Joseph is this governor over the land of Egypt, okay? So they're looking at Joseph, who's now 37. He's looking at them. They were in their 20s when they betrayed him, and now they're in their 40s. And you're going to change, but maybe not that much. And plus, he's got the advantage, really. He's looking at 10, where they're only looking at one. So he might look at a couple and then look at one. It looks like Reuben right there. And then that is Levi, you know, and he can start to, hey, these are my brothers that are before me. And so he speaks roughly to them. Now, some people think, and I mentioned this last week, that some people, some commentators paint Joseph as this little snivelly brat that his dad loved more than everybody else, and he was waving it in his brothers' faces, and that's why his brothers sold him as a slave. As I mentioned last week, I don't see it that way. I see Joseph as a real upright man, a great example of somebody who loved God, who trusted in God. And sure, he's speaking rough to them here, but as we go through this story, we really see the heart of Joseph. I mean, he has a heart, a passion for his brothers, and he's speaking roughly, maybe to test them, because it becomes a test for the brothers to see what they're going to do. Are they going to abandon another brother, this time Benjamin, and just let him go by the wayside and go back to their dad? And so maybe this is part of the reason why this is happening. So verse 9, "Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, 'You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land.' Then they said to him, 'No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all of one man's sons. We are honest men.'" "Your servants are not spies." But he said to them, "No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It is as I spoke to you, saying, 'You are spies. In this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison, that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies.'" And so that's why I kind of think that he is pressing them into this position right here. So he's saying, we're going to send one back. The rest of you guys are going to be locked up here in prison. And by the way, if he wanted to get back at his brothers, I mean, he could just say, hey, guess what? I'm Joseph. You're in prison. No food for you guys. He could have done that, couldn't he, if he wanted to get back with them? Or maybe he could have even had them put to death. I don't know. I mean, he's in a powerful position in Egypt. And so he says, one of you can go home. The rest are going to stay in prison. But notice in verse 17, he says, so he put them all together in prison 3 days. Then Joseph said to them the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house, but you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses and bring your youngest brother to me so your words will be verified and you shall not die. And they did so. Then they said to one another, we are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us and when we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. Do you see how they see this? They see this as what goes around comes around. They see we treated him harshly, and now we're being treated harshly. God is repaying us for the evil that we have done. You know, it's interesting. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verse 2, for with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Do you see how important it is to be merciful? Do you see how important it is to be forgiving to one another? In James 2:13, it says, for judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Joseph is going to be, and he's shown to be a blessing here. He's not going to keep all of them and send one back. How could one take enough grain for the whole household, the whole family clan, to survive back there? And so we see his heart of forgiveness all the way through the story for his family. And it's a great lesson for us as well. And so the anguish of they saw the anguish of Joseph, and that's the reason this distress is coming upon us. And Reuben speaks up and says, this is the reason that his blood is now required of us. Verse 23, but they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. So they think, again, he's Egyptian. He can't tell what they're saying. And so they're saying all this while Joseph is present. And it says in verse 24, and he turned himself away from them and wept. Then he returned to them again and talked with them, and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. So you see the compassion in his heart right there, his love for his brothers as he sees the anguish of their souls that they're going through right then. And so he comes back, and he's going to keep one, and he keeps Simeon. And we're not told why he keeps Simeon, but we can speculate that maybe, I mean, back in the story, it seemed like Reuben wanted to set him free. It seemed like Judah wanted to set him free when he was being thrown in the pit and sold as slave, or at least spared from death. Maybe Simeon is one of the ones that was saying, no, let's kill him. Simeon, if you remember, was a murderer. Simeon and Levi had killed all the men of Shechem because of the Dinah incident, chapter 34. So maybe, don't know, speculation, but maybe that's why he keeps Simeon. Verse 25, then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So he's blessing them abundantly, isn't he? Not just the grain they came to buy, but the money they came to buy the grain with, he gave them back, and he gave them provisions for their journey home. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. But as one of them, verse 27, opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, he saw his money, and there it was in the mouth of his sack. So he said to his brothers, my money has been restored, and there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? I think they view God in kind of a skewed way here. God is punishing us for this. I do believe God disciplines us, don't you? That he disciplines his children. But, you know, when you think about it, what is discipline supposed to be? Is it supposed to be to inflict pain because somebody has done something wrong? Or is discipline to be instructive? bringing discipline to instruct. That's the way we're supposed to do it as parents. And no less our Heavenly Father disciplines the same way. And so the brothers here see this. Oh, great, we have our money. We're going to be in trouble. Verse 29, then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, and told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest men. We are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you are not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. Then it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you. Now, Reuben, not the sharpest knife in the drawer right here. Have any of you ever seen that movie Joseph that I think Turner Broadcasting put out? It's an entertaining movie. But I think it's at this point in the movie where Reuben is saying this, you know, if I don't bring Benjamin back, just kill my sons. And I think it's Walter Mandel that's playing Jacob. And he says, oh, that's just great, Reuben. Okay, if I lose Benjamin, then I'll just start exterminating the rest of my family. You know, kind of a comic relief in the midst of this. Verse 38, but he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead. And he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. Now the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, go back, buy us a little food. Now, I don't know how much time has passed. I mean, they've probably got a considerable amount of grain. And now that has ran out. I don't know what Jacob was thinking. Maybe he was thinking the famine won't last that long. He doesn't know it's going to last 7 years. Maybe he's thinking this is enough food. We'll get through it. And then we won't have to worry about this whole take Benjamin down there. I don't know what he's thinking about Simeon. I don't know if he's thinking, well, lost one more. You know, we'll just keep on going. I don't know his thought. But now they're in the position where they have to go back. So he says, go back and buy some food. Verse 3, but Judah spoke to him saying, the man solemnly warned us, saying, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. And Israel said, why did you deal so wrongfully with me as to tell the man whether you had still another brother? But they said, the man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our family, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? And we told him according to these words, could we possibly have known that he would say, bring your brother down? Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. For if we had not lingered, surely by now we would have returned the second time. Can you see the difference between Judah and Reuben? Reuben says, if we don't come back, kill my kids. Judah says, if anything happens, I'll be the one. I'll be the one that will be the substitute that will take his place. It's interesting to note that the Messiah came from the line of Judah, because Judah is stepping up here to be that substitute. Verse 11, and their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best fruits of the land in your vessels and carry down a present for the man, a little balm, a little honey, spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. So apparently it's not a complete famine. It's the grain that's the main issue. Verse 12, take double money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take your brother also and arise. Go back to the man. And may God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may release your brother and Benjamin. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved. So the men took that present and Benjamin, and they took double money in their hand and arose and went down to Egypt, and they stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, "Take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon." Then the man did as Joseph ordered, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. Now, the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house. And they said, "It is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that we may make a case against us." I'm sorry, let me reread that. Now, the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house. And they said, "It is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may make a case against us and seize us to take us as slaves with our donkeys." When they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door of the house and said, "Oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. But it happened when we came to the encampment that we opened our sacks, and there each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it back in our hand. And if we have brought down other money in our hands to buy food, we do not know who put our money in our sacks." But he said, "Peace be with you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them. Now, again, it seems like this guilty conscience is carrying with them. You know, God, what is God doing to us? They're coming back. They're invited over to Joseph's house for lunch. And they're afraid of what's going to happen. It's the guilt, undoubtedly, that has been there for some 20 years. And, you know, it's the same that's true with us. When we have done something, we carry that guilt, don't we? And I know as kids, you know, there's a guilt that's there when a child does something wrong. And it's usually the punishment that releases that guilt, isn't it? It's like, "Mom, just ground me. Mom, just spank me. Do something," you know. And then they feel like, okay, I have been disciplined, and now I'm okay to do that. Okay to have that guilty conscience removed and all. The cool thing is when Jesus came to die for our sins, he came that not only our sins would be forgiven, but that that guilt would be removed as well. Isn't that awesome? So that we can stand before him. It's not like we feel, or at least it shouldn't be like we feel like we've got to do something to earn his favor, but simply just receive his grace and mercy and be able to be clean before him because of what he's done for us. But the guilty conscience, I was reading David Guzik's commentary a number of years ago, and he talked about this, and I Googled it just to double check and make sure that this was the case, and this is true. The United States government has something called the Federal Conscience Fund, and it's actually a fund that you can anonymously donate to if you've ripped off the government. So but let's say you didn't pay your taxes, you cheated on your taxes, you know, they'll never know, but you can't sleep at night. And so this is a fund, a real fund that they've set up that you can send anonymously money into so that you can have that guilt removed from you. And so he says of this one man who wrote into the IRS and said, "I cheated on my taxes and can't sleep at night. Here's $100. If I still can't sleep, I'll send the rest." That is great, isn't it? But it is a real fund that's up there. That's amazing. So anyway, these guys, and we see the blessing of Joseph on these guys as well, his brothers. So the man brought the men into Joseph's house, verse 24, and gave them water. And they washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys feed. Then they made the present ready for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they would eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house and bowed down before him to the earth. Again, the dreams being fulfilled. Now all 11 brothers are there, bowing down. Then he asked them about their well-being and said, "Is your father well, the old man of whom you spoke? Is he still alive?" And they answered, "Your servant, our father, is in good health. He is still alive." And they bowed their heads down and prostrated themselves.
Then he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom you spoke to me?" And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." Now his heart yearned for his brother, so Joseph made haste and sought somewhere to weep, and he went into his chamber and wept there. Then you just have a sweetheart, you know? Now, Benjamin, I was thinking about this. Benjamin's younger than Joseph, and Joseph was 17 when he was sold as a slave. So Joseph, the last time he saw Benjamin, Joseph was 17. How old was Benjamin? And as I thought about this and trying to piece together the timeline, when Jacob's women are having children in Haran, it's over. It seems like this 7-year window. He worked 7 years for Rachel, ended up with Leah, worked another 7 years and had Rachel and Leah, Bilhah and Zilpah at that time. And so the children come during that window. But then there, and Joseph, 11 brothers come at that time. And then there's another 6 years, it seems to me, another 6 years that he's working for the flocks that he'll receive from his uncle Laban. And then they go to Shechem. There's the issue with Dinah at that point. And then they have to flee there. They go to Bethel. And then after Bethel, we don't know how much time is passing at this point, but then they leave there. And as they're on their way to Ephrathah, entering Bethlehem, that's where Rachel dies, giving birth to Benjamin. So Benjamin could be probably at the oldest, 11 years old, when Joseph saw him last. One commentary I read said he was probably 4 years old, but I don't really know where that number comes from. So he was young enough probably to where Joseph had to say, "Is that your younger brother?" You know, and this again is his blood brother and his love for him. And for Benjamin, you know, he wouldn't have known maybe, he would have been young when he lost his older brother. And so to make the connection at this point might be a little more challenging for him as well. And so Joseph's heart just getting out of the room and weeping for his seeing his brother. Verse 31, then he washed his face and came out and he restrained himself and said, "Serve the bread." So they set him a place by himself and then by themselves and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians cannot eat food with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked in astonishment at one another. So he set them from youngest to oldest. And the chance of putting 11 people together like that is just beyond coincidence. So they're astonished. Then he took servings to them from before him. But Benjamin's serving was 5 times as much as any of theirs. That's a lot of food, huh? So they drank and were merry with him. Now, this plays in, I think, to the whole story. Because remember, it was the favoritism shown to Joseph that created the envy and the hatred in his brother's hearts, the coat of many colors, that ultimately got them to turn on Joseph. And so now it's happening to the youngest, to Benjamin, where he's being favored and he's getting 5 times as much. Chapter 44, and he commanded the steward of his house, saying, "Fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. Also put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, and his grain money." So he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. And as soon as the morning dawned, the men were sent away, they and their donkeys. When they had gone out of the city and were not yet far off, Joseph said to his steward, "Get up, follow the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, 'Why have you repaid evil for good? Is not this the one from which my Lord drinks, and with which he indeed practices divination? You have done evil in so doing.' So he overtook them, and he spoke to them these same words. And they said to him, 'Why does my Lord say these words? Far be it from us that your servants should do such a thing. Look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's slaves.'" Such righteous indignation from such honest men. I mean, they know that they haven't stolen it, so they're standing up, and yet they're setting themselves up as well. Verse 10, and he said, "Now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my slave, and you shall be blameless." Then each man speedily let down his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. So he searched. He began with the oldest and left off with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and each man loaded his donkey and returned to the city. They had an out, didn't they? They said, you know what, if you find that cup, you can kill him and we'll all become slaves. And he said, no. If we find the cup, he'll be the slave and you all are free to go. So they could have ran. They could have abandoned Benjamin like they abandoned Joseph years earlier, but they didn't. They loaded their donkeys and they headed back into the city. Verse 14, so Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house and he was still there, and they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph said to them, what deed is this you have done? Did you not know that such a man as I can certainly practice divination? Then Judah said, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak, or how shall we clear ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Here we are, my Lord's slaves, both we and he also with whom the cup was found. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the cup was found, he shall be my slave. And as for you, go up in peace to your father. Yeah, right. That's not going to be peace if they go home without Benjamin. You know, with these guys, it's notable to see that they not only, and this is where the change is, I think, they not only don't want to abandon Benjamin, but they don't want to see their dad like that anymore. They don't want to see the pain that this is going to cause their father. They've lived with that for 20 years. Verse 18, then Judah came near to him and said, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's hearing, and do not let your anger burn against your servant, for you are even like Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, who is young. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. But you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall see my face no more. So it was when we went up to your servant, my father, that we told him the words of my Lord. And our father said, go back and buy us a little food. But we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother is with us, then we will go down. For we may not see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. And the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. This might be the first that Joseph is getting what happened, that his brothers returned 20 years earlier and said that he was dead. And so this is what Jacob has been living with. Verse 29, but if you take this one also from me and calamity befalls him, you shall bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave. Now, therefore, verse 30, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life, it will happen when he sees that the lad is not with us, that he will die. So your servants will bring down the gray hair of your servant, our father, with sorrow to the grave. For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad as a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest perhaps I see the evil that would come upon my father? Again, this is Judah. This is Judah that is substituting his life for the life of his brother. It's very notable. And Joseph, I think, has seen at this point, the hearts of my brothers have changed. They're not willing to abandon one of their own. They don't want to see their dad go through this again. And I don't know. Again, I'm just speculating. Maybe that's the reason for all of this. Maybe that's the reason for the testing and all. And so that ends chapter 44. You guys want to see what happens? So let's just read, let's close with the last eight verses of chapter 45. Then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, make everyone go out from me. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. I mean, this has been some roller coaster for them. You know, all of a sudden, they're going to be slaves in Egypt. No, wait a minute. Benjamin's going to be a slave. We can't go back without Benjamin. And then Joseph drives everybody out of the house. They're not knowing what's going to happen. And he starts crying, wailing so loud that the house of Pharaoh can hear what's going on. And so you got a picture. They're like this, waiting to see what happens. And then all of a sudden, he lays it on them. I'm Joseph. And they're like, and they're probably like, wow. And then they're probably like, oh my, you know what I mean? This is the one that we sold as a slave into Egypt. Now what's going to happen to us? And Joseph said, verse 4, to his brothers, please come near to me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, notice this, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. What a perspective on that. You know, in the face of those who had betrayed him, had sold him as a slave, and then he goes through not only slavery, but being in prison and all of this. And he recognizes, you know what, God has a plan. He has a plan in all of this. And God did have a plan in all of that, didn't he? He had a plan to accomplish his purpose in saving the nation of Israel. You know, when we look at the sovereignty of God, we see that God has a purpose and a plan on what he is going to do. But he also has given his creatures, us, free will to choose what we're going to do. The cool thing about all of this is when his creatures, who can be very wicked and do wicked things, when we choose to do bad things, God can still work through the sinful hearts of men's actions. How about that? And we see those things. In Romans chapter 8, verse 28, it says, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. We might not fully understand it, but God can take the actions of sinful men and turn them out for good, even in our own lives. Joseph will later say at the end of the book of Genesis to his brothers, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive. You wanted to do me harm, but God had another plan in this. As we're wrapping this up, I want to show you the similarities between Joseph and Jesus, because Joseph really becomes a type of Christ, a picture of Jesus. We see that they were both loved by their father. This is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. Both were rejected by their brothers. Jesus, not only by his actual half-brothers, but by his brethren, the children of Israel, when he came. Both falsely accused. He said he's going to destroy this temple and he's going to build it up in 3 days. He said that we're forbidden to pay taxes to Caesar. Both did not retaliate. Jesus was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and he was silent as that lamb as he was led there. Both were numbered with criminals. Jesus was crucified before two thieves. In both of them, God meant it for good. You see, what man did in their evil heart against Jesus, God meant to be the salvation of humanity. How about that? You know, you've got the actions of men, and you've got the sovereign plan of God. And not to leave it there, but both would be exalted in the end. How about that? Jesus would not stay in the grave, but he would rise victorious. He would ascend into heaven. And one day, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Let me leave you with these verses right here. Peter's sermon on the day of Pentecost in Acts 2:22. Peter said, men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know. Let me tell you about Jesus, the one that you know God had his hand upon, the one that was doing these miracles. Acts 2:23, him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death. I see the sovereignty of God and the free will of man in that verse. Him being delivered, and the idea there is delivered over to death, delivered over to be crucified. Him being delivered by the determined purpose. It was God's plan that Jesus come into this world so that we could be saved, so that he would lay his life down at Calvary. And but yet, Peter says, you guys are guilty. You have taken by lawless hands, crucified and put him to death. So they weren't forced to do it. It was the wickedness of their hearts that turned against Jesus. So there is the sovereignty of God. God's plan, his purpose is going to be meted out. But then there's the free will of man. And people have debated over this for centuries in trying to understand, does man have free will? Is God just working on us as robots? We're going to do what he's destined us to do. The answer to that is you see both in the Bible. You see God's sovereign plan, and you also see the free will of man. And it's hard for us as lesser creatures to be able to understand that and to harmonize that. And that's why it's been an ongoing debate in theological circles for hundreds of years. But we see it in the scriptures. God's will is going to be performed. And maybe the answer to that is the middle word in this verse right here, the word foreknowledge, maybe. Because God knows. He knows everything. I mean, before sinful man takes his actions, God knew it was going to happen from the foundations of the world because he is omniscient. And so maybe that has something to do with it, but I don't think it's as easily figured out as that, or the ongoing debate wouldn't be ongoing. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't end there as well, though. It says in verse 24, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held by it. Praise the Lord. He is alive, and he is alive today. He ever lives to make intercession on our behalf.